Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
Dr. Shauna Shapiro, and I'm a professor, a mother, a clinical psychologist, an author, and my background really is in mindfulness and compassion research and how it can rewire your brain to make you happier and healthier.
Do you mind if we jump straight into student questions?
Yeah, I'd love it.
And guys, if you have questions live here on the chat, go ahead and just message them. And guys, if you want to learn more about Dr. Shauna Shapiro, go to drshaunashapiro.com. So our first question came from Europe, and one of the kids wanted to know, what inspired you to pursue a career in psychology and specializing in mindfulness and self-compassion? Where did that come from?
Yeah. So when I was 17 years old, I was in high school and I was a volleyball player, and my dream was to play volleyball my whole life. And I was actually quite good. So I was captain of my team and I got a scholarship to play at university. And then I had to have spinal fusion surgery. So I had a metal rod put in my spine. I was in a hospital bed for 6 months. I never played volleyball again. And I was in a lot of pain. Both physically, I was in pain, right? I couldn't even turn my head, but also just emotionally, I became depressed and anxious. And at that age, I just didn't have the tools to help me. And so that really led me on a journey into psychology and into mindfulness. And eventually it led me to Thailand, to a monastery to learn about meditation. And while I was there, I was about 19 years old. I had recovered by then. I felt a sense of peace and happiness and contentment that I had never felt before. And so I decided to come back and get my PhD and start studying mindfulness and really understand the science of it. So that's what started this path. And that was 25 years ago. And I still love it.
That's wonderful. We have a question from Lena in France. Lena, you can unmute and you can ask Dr. Shapiro.
Hello. I wondered, when did you start writing?
Pardon?
She wanted to know, when did you start writing?
When did I start writing? So that's a great question. And I'll tell you, I started writing when I was quite young because my grandparents, who helped raise me, who I loved, they wrote 23 novels together. They were writers. And so in my family, everyone wrote. And so I was always writing. And I wrote my first book when I was 29 years old. And I have continued writing ever since then. And it's really one of my joys. So thank you for that question.
That's great. And guys, definitely check out the website, drshaunashapiro.com. We have a question from Gabrielle, and Gabrielle is in Canada. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, nice to meet you. I was considering doing a PhD in my postgraduate. So how's it like to be a PhD student?
Great question. I encourage you to do it. So what's most important as a PhD student is that you love what you're studying. I think it really has to come from your own passion. And so I would be very careful in choosing the programs that you go to and find a professor that is studying what you are excited about. So for me, I got so lucky. I found a wonderful professor, Gary Schwartz. He had been at Harvard and he was studying mind and body interactions. And so when I told him, I want to study mindfulness and meditation, instead of saying I was crazy and I shouldn't do it and it would ruin my academic career, he said, let's do this. Let's bring rigorous science to study what you love. So good luck.
That's wonderful. We have a question from Emily, and Emily is in Europe. Go ahead and ask.
Hi, thank you very much for your time. And I wondered what three tips you would give us to find this feeling of peace and mindfulness as you were talking about before.
Beautiful. So the first thing you can do right now, which is just take a deeper breath in and out. What happens is we start going so fast in life, we just start getting kind of overwhelmed on automatic pilot. So the first part of mindfulness is just bringing our attention back into the present moment so that we can focus. The second tip is to try putting your hand on your heart. When you put your hand on your heart, It releases oxytocin. Oxytocin is the hormone of safety and love. So it starts to calm down your nervous system, right? And then the third thing I would recommend, the third tip, is to think of someone you're grateful for. Someone in your life who you love, you care about, who's been good to you. When you think of someone you're grateful for, it actually changes your whole neurochemistry and makes you feel calmer and happier. Great question.
And that is some wonderful advice. So we have a question that just got emailed to me. One of the students wanted to know, you presented your research to notable figures and organizations around the world. What has been the most memorable experience of your career?
That's a good question. You guys are amazing. So I was invited to go and work with the royal family in Bhutan. So the king and the prince of Bhutan, and we were studying gross national happiness, which is instead of gross national product, which is how, you know, we work in the United States, they measured all their choices at the governmental level on whether or not it would bring happiness to their people. And it was such an inspiring visit on so many different levels. I learned so much from that culture, from the tradition, and we were able to bring our Western science there to collaborate with them. So that was definitely one inspiring moment.
It was amazing. I can't imagine what that was like. I mean, you're like a trendsetter, a trailblazer. Like, it's my own question. What does that feel like where you are out there, the first person to kind of do this kind of stuff? What is that like?
Well, sometimes it's really lonely and scary, I'll admit. And there are many times in my career where I felt like I maybe, you know, was going in the wrong direction. And what I would say and encourage to everyone who's listening is really following your heart. And my grandparents, I'll thank them again, that if you're doing what you love and what means something to you, it'll keep you energized. Even if sometimes you're successful and sometimes you're not, it won't matter because inside you know you're doing work aligned with your heart and with your soul.
That's amazing, amazing advice. One of our kids overseas, they messaged, in your TEDx talk, The Power of Mindfulness, what key messages do you hope viewers take away?
So the most important message that I want all of you to take with you is it's never too late. It's never too late to change. That sometimes we feel like I'm stuck or I've made such a bad mistake. It's kind of, I've ruined everything. What neuroplasticity shows us is that the brain is always able to change, that you can always carve out new neural pathways, that if you're feeling sad or depressed or anxious, it doesn't mean you're going to feel that way for your whole life. And it's possible to carve out pathways of greater joy and greater calm and greater clarity. So you can always begin again. That's kind of the main takeaway.
That's amazing, amazing advice. As a teacher, is there any connection between mindfulness and self-compassion practices that possibly impact academic performance?
Yes, absolutely. So this is the most interesting and unknown thing. When we shame and judge ourselves, it shuts down the learning centers of the brain. This is very interesting. So the key to academic performance, to learning, and to doing well on exams is to actually be kind to yourself, to actually treat yourself like you would treat a dear friend, to be on your own team. Because when you do that, it releases dopamine. And dopamine is this wonderful neuromodulator of motivation and learning. So being kind to yourself actually turns on the learning centers of the brain. And I know it feels kind of strange because normally we try to like push ourselves or beat ourselves up to do better. But actually, if you can support yourself, you will perform better.
That is brilliant advice. It just seems so simple, but also just like it's just right there. Can you by chance share a success story about how mindfulness reshaped somebody's life that you worked with?
Yes. I was actually just talking about this. There was a woman that I was working with, a young mother with breast cancer, and she had two young kids. And so it was very, very scary for her, not only the diagnosis of cancer, but also who was going to help take care of her children. And she felt very angry very anxious and very scared. And so we were working together. And first we practiced mindfulness, just being able to, as I said, take a breath, come into the present moment, just name the emotions she was feeling. And then we practiced doing the kindness, right? Putting our hand on our heart, bringing kindness to herself, just like she would if a dear friend had cancer. And those were helping a little bit, but not tremendously. But what really helped her is then I had her think of all the other women in the world who were diagnosed with breast cancer just at the same time as her, and to send them her compassion, to realize she wasn't alone and that she could send them her blessings, her compassion. So she thought of all these other women who had cancer and she wished them, may the cancer heal, may you have strength, may you know you're not alone. And as she was doing this, she felt empowered. She felt like she wasn't just a victim. And she realized she wasn't alone. And that's what really set her on her healing journey.
That is incredible. Now, when you're beginning with all this research on mindfulness, did you ever have any challenges that you faced? And if you did, like, how'd you overcome them, especially in academia?
Well, I've had a lot of challenges, both in academia and my personal life. And I think, you know, struggle is part of life and it's okay. I think it's really important to realize that mistakes or not doing things perfectly is okay. And that's how we learn. And I'll tell you, the very first paper that I wrote, I got back all these kind of negative comments. It was for an international book. And I remember some of the editors were in Israel and some were in London. And I was only 22 years old. So this was very new for me. And I got all this criticism and feedback. And I remember calling my grandparents and saying, crying and saying they didn't like it. And my grandparents said, oh my goodness, you're so lucky that for free, you got all of that feedback from these different editors. They say, when we write books, we always have to pay people to give us feedback. And they said, these comments are gonna make your paper so much stronger. And it to this day is still one of the best papers I ever published. And so they helped me realize that feedback and struggle and working hard was actually could be joyful and wonderful.
That is amazing. That talk about looking on the bright side of things. So one of the kids emailed, how does mindfulness contribute to building better relationships with your friends and family?
Very much so. A lot of times people think mindfulness is just like a personal thing where it's just about like paying attention to yourself and focusing inward. Mindfulness is very much a relational practice. And what I've found in my own life is as I learn how to be kind to myself, how to regulate my own emotions, how to be present, my relationships get better. I have more love and more compassion to give other people. So one of the ways it's really helped me is just as a mother. I have four kids, and when I'm stressed and anxious and worried, I'm not as good a mom, right? We're not as good a friend or a daughter. So mindfulness helps us kind of bring calm to ourselves so that we can then give it out into the world.
That is amazing. Amazing. I'm getting so much out of this. And I know there are I'm getting a lot of great messages from the kids. So your work has been featured in major media outlets. How do you think the perception of mindfulness has changed in mainstream media?
Yes. I think that mindfulness has become so popular that sometimes people don't understand it at all. They think mindfulness is kind of some new age spiritual thing, or they think mindfulness is just about paying attention in the present moment. So I want to be really clear, and I've really dedicated my academic life to creating a definition of mindfulness so everyone can understand its nuance. So mindfulness has three parts. Attention, which we all know, right? Just being present, not thinking about the future or the past, being here. But it's also about, why are you paying attention? What's important to you? What do you care about? So that's your intention. This is, why am I paying attention? And also, how am I paying attention? Are you paying attention in a critical, judgmental way? Or are you paying attention with kindness? So this is your attitude. So mindfulness is about intention, attention, and attitude. And all three of these parts kind of work together. And mindfulness is this presence that emerges when you're intentionally paying attention in a kind, curious way.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful, wonderful stuff. And guys, again, to check out drshaunashapiro.com. We'll go with a couple more student questions. I'm going to let you go. Mianna, I apologize if I mispronounced that. You had a good question. Go ahead and ask.
Okay. As it is finally time for college admission decisions for high school seniors, would you have any tips related to mindfulness to face these decisions, whether they're positive or negative?
Yeah, great question. In fact, my son is 18 years old and he's facing his college decisions right now. So I think, again, this is where self-compassion is really important. So that we focus so much on self-esteem with our children and in education, we focus on self-esteem, but self-esteem is kind of a fair weather friend. It's with you when you do well and you get an acceptance, but it's not really there with you. It kind of abandons with when maybe something doesn't go well or you get rejected. The beauty of self-compassion is it's always your friend. It's always with you. It cheers you on if you get accepted. And then it also comforts you if you don't, so that you realize you are worthy and deserving of love and kindness no matter what, that you are worthy, that you are enough no matter what. Things don't always go as planned, but it doesn't take away from who you are.
Gosh, you're changing so many lives right now, and you make it look so easy. This is incredible. So the final question, I always ask this of all of our guests, as these kids kind of go off into the world and figure out what kind of paths they want to lead, is there any advice that you could give to them?
Yes. Try lots of different things. It's okay to not know. I think people feel like they need to like have the perfect idea or they have to know for sure. And if they don't, they just don't start. They kind of keep waiting until they know 100%. Life is meant to be lived. Sometimes we have to live the questions and the uncertainty so that we can live our way into the answers. So trust the process and know that you don't have to do it all perfectly.
Amazing, amazing stuff. All right, we're going to let you go because I know it's getting kind of late for some of our kids in Asia and in Eastern Europe. So before I end the meeting for all, traditionally, I allow everyone to unmute. And can we all say thank you to Dr. Shauna Shapiro for taking time out of her day to come talk to you guys. Thank you so much, doctor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.